This is News and Notes. I'm Farai Chidea. The U.S. military is expanding its footprint in Africa, and that's got some people worried. Plus, a new study shows some hopeful signs in the quality of African governance. We've got that and more in our Africa update with Amira Woods. She's co-director of Foreign Policy and Focus at the Institute for Policy Studies. Hi, Amira.
Hey, Farai.
So last week, the U.S. African Military Command, or AFRICOM, took over all U.S. military operations in Africa. Before AFRICOM was created a year ago, the American military involvement was split between the European Command, Central Command, and Pacific Command. Those are all different command units overseeing different aspects of the military by geography. Now, AFRICOM is headed by a four-star general, William Ward. He says AFRICOM represents part of a new U.S. strategy to engage with Africa.
I think there was a misperception that the command was being stood up to establish large bases, garrisons on the continent of Africa, bringing in large numbers of troops. Not the case at all. We're not a command that's going to have squadrons of airmen and battalions of soldiers and garrisons of other troops on the continent of Africa. We're not to militarize the continent.
What do you think people on the continent of Africa are making of this question, you know?
I think people see this as an expansion of the U.S. military footprint on African soil. They see it as the U.S. interested in Africa because of all these strategic assets. Clearly, oil is top of the list, with 24% of U.S. oil now coming from the African continent. Controlling oil is key for this administration and for the U.S. in general. You know, I think the other issue people are concerned about is that the Bush administration is interested in countering China and creating a presence that would counteract the influence of China that's expanding on the continent. And of course, the last issue is around this so-called war on terror, where people see Africa as the next frontier in the so-called war on terror. And so there's a tremendous amount of skepticism, in fact, throughout the continent, voices of resistance from governments, from non-governmental organizations, really throughout the continent, saying, what is this? At a time when there is a global financial crisis, when people are facing not only the fuel crisis, but food, global food crisis, this is the last thing that Africa needs, more support, training, equipment for militaries on the continent and increasing also the U.S. military's footprint there.
Let's talk about governance. Now, in much of sub-Saharan Africa, there are questions of transition, leadership, accountability, but according to a new report by the Ibrahim Index of African Governance, there has been an improvement since 2006. The best governed countries, it says, were South Africa, Botswana, Mauritius, Seychelles. The worst included Somalia, the Democratic Republic of Congo, Chad, Sudan, and Angola. So explain a little bit more about how you can even come up with an index of good governance.
Well, you know, this is a very wealthy businessman, Mo Ibrahim, who has decided to create a prize for leadership in Africa. And he's decided to give the prize to these heads of state that he and a cohort of others deem worthy. And so the index is meant to take a basket of sort of political goods, yeah, in terms of transparency, of accountability, and to put a stamp of approval on who's performing well and who's not. I guess I have to say I found it interesting that one of the key countries, Equatorial Guinea, that many say is at issue in terms of human rights violations. And, you know, it's interesting that that was off the list. It's quite ironic, you know, that some countries, particularly countries that are oil exporters, interestingly enough, didn't quite make it to the list. So I think it is encouraging that this index has shed light on some of the positive gains on the continent. But I think it is also interesting who's left off the list.
So you're saying that it could have been not quite fair?
Well, I think clearly when it comes to governance, we need to have people say, you know, people within the country having their vote, determining their leaders, holding those leaders accountable. That's the best barometer of good governance, you know. So this is sort of an external actor that is giving a stamp of approval. I think it's a team of experts linked to Harvard University and other universities that have played a key role in determining here who is governing well. And clearly it's it's positive, and it's important to uphold all the positive images that come out in these types of indicators. But I think we also have to look at opportunities to give indications from the people, from the bottom up, for people to say how their governments are treating them and meeting their own needs within their country.
Now, the area that showed the most improvement was something called participation in human rights. That's a pretty broad umbrella. But if you could tell us one thing that you see among the countries on the continent that you think is going well, from your perspective, not from theirs.
Clearly, one of the things on the continent that goes unnoticed is the expansion of women's political participation. There's a lot of attention to Ellen Johnson Sirleaf, but clearly you have countries, for example, Rwanda, where now a full 55% of their parliament is controlled by women. You know, 18% in the U.S., 55% in Rwanda. It is tremendous to see these advances in women's political leadership, and it's happening right across the continent. I think this is an indicator of what needs to happen in this 21st century, Farai.
Let's move on to a story that's quite disturbing. The BBC has an investigative report that terrorist suspects in Africa are being held in a prison dubbed as Africa's Guantanamo. These are suspects reportedly flown into the Ethiopian capital of Addis Ababa. And the former prisoners say they were interrogated for months, beaten, left in isolation. What do we know about this story?
Well, this is a story. It's been around now for about a year, but there's more and more information that's coming steadily. It's about Africa's Gitmo, as it's being called here. There are an estimated three, it's hard to tell how many, but at least three secret prisons in Ethiopia, could be some in other countries as well, that are being used by the U.S. as these sites of rendition, you know, being able to pick up suspects without any regard to human rights, you know, and cart them off to these hidden prisons where often they could be tortured. There is really no sense of habeas corpus, any kind of rule of law here within these prisons. I think clearly, you know, you have instances where there are reports of several hundred people being picked up in Somalia, in Kenya, and elsewhere, and taken to these secret detention centers. There are reports of women, even children, being held in these secret centers. So it is worrisome, and I think the concern really is that with all the tension on the other Gitmo, the Guantanamo Bay, that there will be public pressure to close Guantanamo Bay, but these other secret prisons that are now being strewn around the world will continue to remain in force and will be really a place of violence, of torture, and of core violation of basic human rights of individuals.
Who's responsible for these prisons?
Well, that's the question. You know, clearly the U.S. says these are Ethiopian prisons and it's under Ethiopian jurisdiction. But as we know well, the hand of the U.S. is at play. And you have had officers from the U.S., intelligence and other military forces involved in the so-called war on terror, playing a critical role in these secret prisons. So I think what is needed is shedding light on this, you know, and being able to continue to draw attention to what is happening in these prisons so that there can't be this, you know, it's the other person's fault syndrome, where the Ethiopian says the Americans says the Ethiopians, and in the end, it is innocent people, many of whom haven't had a right to trial even, respected, that those are the ones that are really in danger of having their lives lost and being tortured and severely hampered in the future.
All right. Amira, thank you.
A pleasure. Thank you, Farai.
Amira Woods is co-director of Foreign Policy and Focus at the Institute for Policy Studies, and she joined us from our headquarters in Washington, D.C.